little bit more.
May it please the court, my name is Tina Snee, and I'm here as counsel for the appellant, Christopher Bartolomeo. We are here asking this court to find that the federal insurance policy that was issued to Hogan and Lovells applies to an automobile accident that occurred between my client, Christopher Bartolomeo, and Vuvo back in April of 2009. There are three reasons that we believe that the coverage applies under the federal policy. The first is that we got a jury verdict that says that the facts in this case applied to the policy by the jury found that the policy applied. That's the first one. Second is that the federal policy's terms and conditions are ambiguous and therefore have to be construed in favor of the coverage in this case. And third is that under the terms of the policy, there is best construed, the facts in this particular case are that Christopher Bartolomeo was in connection with work when this accident happened and or was part of the business and
Well, what facts other than he was driving to work is in connection with?
Well, it's connected to work.
Okay. What fact other than driving to work, going and coming? What fact other than that?
I think that's where some of the confusion comes when you say going and coming. It takes us again.
Okay, well, whatever nomenclature, what fact do you have other than he was commuting?
I have the facts that we had two witnesses, both of them partners at Hogan and Lovells, who testified extensively, actually, over what it is to be a partner at Hogan and Lovells. And specifically, they all talked about...
Well, most partners have to drive to work. So
that's true,
if they
but
said
you asked
that,
what else I had. You asked what else I had, so I was trying to answer...
Okay, is there anything other than that?
Yes, I have that their work is longer than just working 9-to-5. That Christopher Bartolomeo had a home office, that he was an appellate lawyer, and actually did quite a bit of work at home. That he should actually on this day, he also worked at home by answering an email and telephone call, and then was literally going from one place of work to the other place of work when this accident happened. Mr. Bisio, also a partner, agreed that, also actually happens to be an insurance coverage lawyer, testified that he thought driving to work was in connection with work. That's the term that we have to use. In connection with work.
That's an interpretation of the contractual language. Ordinarily, contracting parties, including a named insurer, doesn't get to go on the stand and say what the clause means to them subjectively.
Ordinarily, but that did come into evidence and was part of the evidence of this case that was not objected to. We're not here, actually, on any issues regarding what came in or didn't come in this particular case, even though it was a jury trial, and that's generally how jury trials, I believe, do come here. But in this particular case, the evidence that came in by both those witnesses talk about in connection with. And we even went through the cross-examination.
So he drives to work, and sometimes he works sometimes at home, and that's enough.
He drove, it's not only that he generally worked at home, that he actually often did work at home, but on that particular day, he also did work at home. And both Mr. Bisio and Mr. Bartolomeo talked about on their commutes to work, they often thought about work.
Is there any evidence that happened here?
Mr. Bartolomeo says he can't remember what he was thinking about at the time of this accident. So,
okay.
But they both talked about it. But I think if you look at all of the evidence, it talks about, and even Judge Horn talked about, how law and business and our lives have changed, especially for these two partners, in a big law firm where there is not just a 9-to-5 and a punch in and out. And the language that was chosen by this policy was in connection with work. It was not a coming and going as a worker's comp.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you to turn to symbol 9. Symbol 9, which is the coverage. And there's actually two sentences. The first sentence talks about in connection with your business, and the second sentence says this includes autos owned by partners, but only while used in your business or personal affairs.
And that's the
language that went to the jury.
Yes.
Is that narrower than in connection?
Well, actually, that's one of the points. And it actually has a little bit more on that I'll talk about in a second or so. But yes, what it talks about is there's two sentences. The first sentence is exactly what we talked about, used in connection with your business. Then the second sentence starts with this includes, and then talks about autos, used in your business or personal affairs. So if you look at those two sentences together...
No, it's the partnership's business and the partnership's personal affairs.
I'll get to that. But in answer to Judge Millett's question, in regards to the first sentence, it's sort of like saying, and no offense because it is near lunchtime, but all Italian food is covered. Second, that includes pizza. So that's how, if you...
But only if. But it says, but only if.
I don't disagree with the only if. But if you look at the first sentence with the second sentence, the first sentence is bigger, correct?
Correct.
And then the second sentence talks about the business or personal affairs. So back to Judge Kinsey, yes, it does talk about business or personal affairs. What is that referring to?
Can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
Because you talked about in connection with, it's like Italian food.
Yes.
And then the other part is like pizza, but only if it has pepperonis. So isn't the whole question going to be whether or not it has pepperonis?
It could. That's a good question, Max. But the answer is, since it's a policy, you have to use all the sentences. And again, it goes back to what their intent of was all the policy, isn't just limited to number 9. Because if you actually look at it with Judge Millett, it says members, of course, partners, but then it also talks of members of their household.
Can I stop you there for a
sure.
second, too? Because in my analogy, when we were talking about pepperonis, you know, pizza only if it has pepperonis, what do we care about Italian food? You know, you keep coming back to the in connection with,
correct,
which is the big root, the Italian food. Why do you keep doing that? Aren't we worried about whether or not it's a pepperoni?
Because the sentences have to be read together, right? So if you're saying...
Read those together. Italian food, pizza only if it has a pepperoni, okay. All we care about is whether or not it's pepperoni on the pizza, right?
Because it doesn't just limit it to pepperoni. Because if you look at the before
but
that,
it's the pepperoni is limited to pizza. We have a covered auto.
Or a piece of chocolate or something here.
Right? The covered auto is the issue we're trying to figure out.
It is a covered auto if used in connection with work by a member, which Mr. Bartolucci was, by employees, everybody, or members of their household, while used in the business or personal affairs.
Yeah, I don't understand your conversation with Justice Goodwin, because the caveat applies to every bit of that sentence.
But we don't have anywhere what the business or personal affairs are, because that's everything.
Well, generally speaking, if you just fly over the law on this, you're going to find the Portal to Portal Act, the torts statements, the going and coming exclusionary rules of workers' comp.
Correct.
The Fair Labor Standards Act. I mean, almost everywhere in the law, this is not enough. And you're saying, but in this one case, in this one provision of this language of this insurance agreement, it is enough. And Judge Horn just said, I just don't see it.
No, I would disagree, because that law is not what this is about. This is a contract of insurance purchased by Hogan and Lovells to cover automobiles operated by its employees, its members of the household, when it does, and the San Francisco School Board.
So every employee, every secretary, every partner of that law firm under this policy is covered when they go to work, driving to work.
For $20,000, and they've got $1 million worth of coverage.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal for...
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is they did want to do that. They wanted to purchase a coverage that was going to cover everything. Because, as we all know, they didn't make this language that says it's only coming and going because it's a workers' comp policy. It's not. They didn't say we only want it to cover under respondeat superior, which is another line of cases. I mean, I don't disagree with you that there's lines of cases out there. But when you're going to purchase insurance, you're going to purchase it to cover you. They didn't go in and say, give us the SR-22 deal on auto policies.
But the general principle is, whatever ambiguities exist, it's only from the perspective of a reasonable insured. If the managing partner were to come into my office as a lawyer and say, I think I covered all my employees driving to work and back, I'd say, whoa, that's pretty aggressive reading. If you think so, give it a shot.
Actually, the ambiguity is against the insurance company who drafted it and drafted it poorly. That's how ambiguity is.
Right, but the ambiguity is resolved in favor of the insured if it's a reasonable interpretation from the perspective of the insured. So whoever placed the policy and negotiated the binder on this had to be under a reasonable man concept, thinking this would cover.
They do think clearly, because they also added on the endorsement for employees. They added on the endorsement for...
Well, that's if employees are driving somewhere on behalf of the law firm.
Yeah, why do you think it covers commuting? Because the general line of cases are the commuting is not covered. So why do you think that this policy covers commuting? Why would they understand
because
that?
Because it says it's in connection with work for the business or personal affairs. Going away from work, you know, who knows where you're going. He was driving to work. In fact, the line of cases that come up, and none of them, of course, are even the highest court opinions of the other states, this is not a commuting case. It's in connection with work. His only purpose of his going there. Other cases talk about you dropped off your kids at the babysitter.
Well, does your case rise or fall on the idea that he works at home because he's got to talk to Kuwait in the middle of the night, and therefore his first stop is necessarily going to work or something?
I think it adds to it. my personal belief, which I've argued so it's all over the thing, my personal belief is if you're covering me for business, for my business or personal affairs, there's nothing left in my life that I ever have.
That's because you are you. But if you is the law firm, which is the named insured on the binder, then it's a completely different analysis.
Not necessarily, because there is no personal affairs of Hogan and Lovells. They're a business. They can't do anything. They can't drive a car. It all has to.
Isn't you defined under the definitional section as the named insured on the certificate? Isn't that the definition of you?
The first page has that.
Right. It's a definition that applies to the whole document.
You have to read the policy in total. So the fact that one page, the first page, does say you refers to Hogan Lovells has to be taken into effect with what else is done. So when they added the employee endorsement, they made them all insurers. So therefore,
they didn't make them use, though, for purposes of interpreting the language of the scope of coverage.
They did an endorsement. I mean, they're forms. There's only so much you can do. But if by adding that and the San Francisco, making them specifically insured for auto coverage when they owned no cars, they clearly thought that it was going to be covering and that's what I argued to Judge Brown. You can't just look at the one you and say, well, that's really clear. You have to look at a whole insurance policy and figure out what is going on with that whole policy altogether. And in this particular case, the you doesn't make sense to be Hogan and Lovells when Hogan and Lovells doesn't have any personal affairs and doesn't have any autos. So they were clearly trying to cover any potential that could be connected with work in the business or personal affairs. And that's what they did. They purchased a policy to cover.
Is it necessarily true that personal affairs has no possible application to a partnership? If the partner comes into my office and I'm a junior associate and he says, you know, please pick up my laundry down the street, that's not the business affairs of the partnership, but I'm obviously going to get in the car and go do it, right? Maybe that the point of that is there are certain incidental things that happen that really aren't directly tied to business, but we want to cover that.
And the simple answer is Hogan and Lovells wanted to cover everything. They wanted to try and cover any use of an automobile that in any way was connected with the business or personal use to cover everything. That's what they were trying to purchase, using the auto in any way connected with work, including the dry cleaner, including the Christmas party. But it's oddly enough, if you look at Mr. Bisio's cross-examination, or actually redirect, he even says, first, of course, I can't think of any personal use for Hogan and Lovells. But then says, I believe this policy would cover if a partner is at the homestead, he didn't use the word homestead, some resort, and the spouse, unrelated, goes driving and is in an accident. He says, well, that's personal use and that's covered. So, which
this
goes,
is the partner testifying?
Yeah, Mr. Bisio's.
Well, how but much is that worth? People don't get to testify as to what contractual language means. That's the court's job.
This was a jury. So it went to the jury on this issue. We gave them a special instruction to help them under the terms and conditions of the policy.
Well, let's talk about going to the jury. I note in your briefs, you cite 8.01680.
Correct.
But you never cite 8.01336 subsection E, and it's a convenient distinction. 680, you can't overturn a verdict or a judgment of the trial court unless it's plainly wrong or without evidence to support it.
Correct.
That's not the standard under 336E, which is an advisory jury.
I'm not under 801336. I'm not under that one. The advisory opinions, we used to have advisory under Chancery for 2006. This was not under this.
We didn't give up equitable principles when we changed and merge law and chancery.
I don't.
And those statutes still exist, and they're still enforced as equitable principles that are applicable in cases in the common law.
I don't disagree, but we were not under that.
Well, isn't a DJ action in this, which relief you were looking for, in the nature of equitable relief?
The way this case was tried to the jury and instructed by Judge Horn was that they were to make that determination. And that's why we did part of the policy as part of the verdict to them. And also in regards to the factual issue, even back when we do equitable or out of chancery, always the jury's finding on the factual issues was still binding. It was not. But Judge Horn himself
Well, if it came under 336E, it wasn't binding.
Judge Horn, we didn't try it under that. Even Judge Horn, in his opinion, rejected Mr. McGavin after our trial, saying that this was advisory. He says, no, this wasn't advisory. We didn't try it as advisory. He said, Angst did not, I'm not sure I'm saying it correct, against AGONSTD, John McGavin's case from 2000 before. Judge Horn specifically rejected that. We never tried it under 801-336. We tried it as a jury trial on those issues.
All right. Well, your time has expired. I guess we'll find out something from the other side. Why don't you start where she left off? What was this tried under?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is John McGavin. I'm here on behalf of Hogan Lovells and Federal Insurance Company. Your Honor, I disagree on the issue of the authority for the jury trial. Under 801-336E, an advisory jury still exists, and I believe this case was, in fact, tried as an advisory jury.
What about the fact that Judge Horn specifically said it was not?
What he said, Your Honor, is when I said this is an issue out of chancery, he said, no, it's not. And I, upon reflection, I believe that what he was saying is an issue out of chancery is not still available under the merger of law and equity. But that was just a comment that we had during the proceedings. What I would say is that the way the evidence was developed, for example, throughout the proceeding, Judge Horn consistently said, we may submit a factual issue to the jury, but the ultimate determination of coverage is going to be made by the court, which I believe means that the case was tried as an 8.01-336E advisory jury.
Did the parties, did either side say the language is ambiguous and we need parole evidence?
No.
Or did both parties say it's clear as a bell and I win, and the other side says it's clear as a bell and I win?
There was no suggestion that we needed extrinsic evidence or parole evidence.
So it's a question of law, what an unambiguous contract means. You don't even submit that to a jury to begin with, that question.
That was my position throughout these proceedings, Your Honor. And if you look at the record, starting May 9th of 2012, when the case first came before the court on our demurrer, Judge Brown held at that point, implicitly, that commuting is not covered.
So can I interrupt one more time? So it's not so much advisory issue out of chancery versus non-advisory. Is what is the trial judge looking to get from the jury? And I take it from your perspective, the paradigm was he's going to decide what everyone agrees to be an unambiguous contractual provision, which is a question of law for the court. But if there's factual disputes, you know, whether he's talking on the cell phone, whether, you know, he's thinking about his billable hours as he's driving along or whatever, let the jury tell me what the answer to that is.
Well, Your Honor, I have to answer that question in a bit of a roundabout way, because the record was on November 28, 2012, on the amended complaint when the case came back before the court on our demurrer. Judge Brown specifically said, should I put a stake in this case? Because if it's commuting and there's no facts in dispute, this is, in fact, a matter of law, and the parties can save thousands and thousands of dollars on appeal to this court. And I would urge the court to see at the appendix at pages 524, 526, and 527, the colloquy that Judge Brown had with the parties, where he says, if you're saying, counsel, that all you have is commuting, therefore no facts in dispute, he says, not on my watch. This is not a covered case, and I should save these parties the tremendous expense. So, as the case developed, my opposition, Mr. Strong, in the other case, said he thought he might be able to develop some other evidence. Ms. Snee's position was, commuting is covered. So we had a case where there were no facts in dispute. My view was, we didn't even have to get to the jury. So, when we came up for trial, at the end of the plaintiff's case, I moved to strike. The judge said, then, I'm denying the motion. I put in exhibits. I renewed the motion, and then the court took that under advisement. This, I think, is sort of an outgrowth of Brown versus Koulizakis and the caution, extraordinary caution, of the trial courts in regard to being short-circuiting a jury trial. And it's a good example of, in retrospect, if we had no facts in dispute, it was a matter of law, and perhaps Judge Brown was right, that then, if it's just commuting, Ms. Snee, let's see if the Supreme Court agrees. So
under that scenario, if evidence came in during the jury trial evidentiary hearing, or whatever we want to call it, that said he was talking on the cell phone the whole way there with clients and multitasking, and the jury returned a verdict, then the case would be over from your perspective, right?
Not necessarily, but yes, it would be different.
This appeal would be over, right?
Possibly, yes. Although I would say it's a slightly different issue because the use of the car, which is what this covers, doesn't cover the use of the phone. I don't want to create too fine a line there.
Well, then, imagine evidence where the managing partner says everybody should drive their own cars and answer the phone when I call them.
Right.
So your reconstruction of this is there's a law part and there's evidence part, and the evidence part didn't come in.
There was no evidence, precisely. There was never any evidence that he was doing anything other than commuting. They want to talk about he did work at home. What he did at home is, the way that their system works is, when you get a voice message at the office, you get an email that says you have a voice message. He called to see what the voice message was, but we don't even know if it was business related or whether it was his friends talking about the baseball game he was going to, or his family physician, or his kid's doctor. We don't know any of that. That's not
in the record. He didn't listen to the voice message in the car.
Pardon me?
He didn't listen to the voice message in the car.
No, sir. No, Your Honor. When he was at home, he also cleaned up a cat mess on one of the upholstered chairs. He was going to go to the office, get there around 11. There was a 3 o'clock Nats game. He did not do any billing while he was at home. His law firm doesn't pay him portal to portal to commute. He doesn't get reimbursed for his car, his mileage, his gas. Nothing about this commute, under the various exceptions under the workers' compensation cases, applies under this circumstance. Pure and simple, there were no facts in dispute, in my view, and I wish that Judge Horn had just ruled as a matter of law at the end of the plaintiff's case.
Counselor, can I ask you a different question?
Yes.
About that symbol 9, about the two sentences, the one that talks about in connection with, and then the other sentence, how do you...
I think they all go together, and I think that the use of the non-owned vehicle has to be in connection with the business, which means in the business or personal affairs of the employer.
The only problem I have is the language includes. Includes usually talks about a subset, and you would think the second sentence would be a subset of the first sentence, that somehow in connection with would be broader. But I also understand Justice Goodwin's position that pizza means it's got to include, pepperoni.
The other courts around the country that we've cited on brief that have cited this, they read that all together, including the FAM decision. And although
I've read those, I understand that. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's all read together, and that's the way the case was tried. That's the way Judge Horn interpreted it, and I believe, based upon the jury instructions that were submitted by my opposition, they believe that as well.
You've told us what it doesn't include. What do you think this policy does include?
I didn't hear you.
You've given us example. I mean, this particular case, you say this particular fact situation is not covered by the policy.
Right.
So my question is, her position is, well, this policy had to cover something. So can you give me a fact situation that it would cover?
Sure. Portal-to-portal travel. So, for example, if you are attending a hearing in the Virginia Supreme Court and you leave from your home early in the morning and don't detour to the office, and you bill your client for that portal-to-portal travel from your home in Fairfax to Richmond, you get reimbursed for your mileage, and you bill the client for that, and then tragically you're involved in an accident, I believe this will cover. Likewise, if you attend to your office and then leave your office directly on your way to Richmond for a hearing before this court, I think that would be covered if it occurred in in the business affairs of the firm. Likewise, if your duty on the way to work every morning is to pick up bagels for the assembled group in your firm for Friday morning, and you make a detour from your ordinary commute. You go to the bagel shop to pick up bagels, and you're reimbursed for that. You're paid for that. It's part of the personal affairs of the law firm.
Do you think the respondeat superior is involved in that, in cases where the law firm could be sued?
I think so, and that's why I think this case is so important, because the law in Virginia has been so clear for so long, whether it's in the workers' compensation context or vicarious liability, that if this interpretation is going to be adopted, that in connection with the business or personal affairs of the law firm would include your commute, I think that we will create some confusion for our trial judges and for our employers as well. I think that it does. It's illustrative of what is the scope of the employment.
Let me ask you one additional question. To me, the real thing that could be different in this case, it doesn't appear to be because of the way the facts were developed, is the whole concept of working from home, which is an evolving thing. Certainly judges do it from home, lawyers do it from home. If you have overseas clients with a different time zone, you may be working from home. How is that going to play into this whole thing? Are we going to have to renegotiate insurance coverage contracts?
Well, I think that that's going to be fact-driven. And that was a question that Judge Horn asked me when we were arguing this after the jury verdict we came in on the post-trial motion. And the more I thought about his question, I think it was directly on the issue. It's going to be very fact-specific based upon how you get compensated. And I think it will deal with some of the exceptions that are outlined in the workers' compensation arena. So, for example, do you get paid while you're doing that work from home? Are you billing a client while you're doing that work from home? Is your home office something that you declare on your tax return as part of an expense? Is your phone line paid for by your law firm? Your internet paid for by your law firm? Is it a requirement of your employment contract with your law firm that you maintain a copier, internet, computer, and do you get expenses paid? So there's going to be, I think, a very detailed investigation and factual basis, and I do think it could occur. Certainly it could occur. I'm not saying it could never, but I'm saying on this record, the burden being on Mr. Bartolomucci and Mr. Vo to prove that this was in the business or personal affairs of the law firm, it's just where it was on those two hearings in front of Judge Brown. It's just commuting, and it didn't change. And they tried awfully hard. The record will show our request for admissions, which we put into evidence and talked about. We had some 50 or 60 requests for admissions. We tried to think of every possibility that could have been part of the work, and he admitted he wasn't doing any of them. None of them. He couldn't even say he was thinking about the case. And years ago when I started practicing, he used to be able to bill an insurance company for thinking on file, TOF it was called. You can't do that.
Were those admissions presented to the jury?
Yes, they were put into evidence and they're in the record. So we offered those in evidence. I believe they came in. I don't want to misspeak on the record.
And they were never allowed to be withdrawn by the court?
Your Honor, I don't want to overstate on how that was presented as either a document or read in. And I don't want to overstate my position and be found to be incorrect. In summary, then, we believe that the case law in this case, or in the case law in this arena, favors us, including the Fourth Circuit opinion, that the case law which has been cited in opposition is not persuasive and or binding, and finally that the court should find that Mr. Bartolomucci was not within the business or personal affairs of the law firm as defined in the policy. And unless there are any other questions, I know that I have to respond to Mr. Strong in just a minute, so I will step back. Thank you very much for hearing.
All right. Call the next case.
Vote versus